persecution, trial, and tribulation. The Church of God the Eternal presents the number 18 tape in this series of vital interest and intense concern to every Christian. Your speaker will be Mr. Raymond Cole.
All right, now to get into the sermon today, let me ask, as a way of introduction, how much trust can we put in God? Just how trustworthy is God? And where is Abraham truly, or how, or in what area is manifested truly the children of Abraham as the father of the faithful today? And what does this have to do with trials, tribulation, and persecution? A great deal. What war are we fighting today? There's a major war going on. But with respect to that war, what are the promises of God? And what is the end result of any who persecute God's chosen? God may allow it for the purpose of trial, the various experiences that we need to go through. But for everyone who takes an advantage of God's chosen, there's an awesome price that has to be paid. What is that price? What are the end results? And more particularly, brethren, what we need to remember is that what happens when we persecute one another from within. I tell you, God is not going to take it lightly for somebody who knows, who's been given the knowledge of His will and of His way of life, and who abuses that by taking advantage of someone who is a servant of the eternal God, a chosen child of His. In general, then, what is the fate of the enemies of God's people? Back in Genesis, the 14th chapter, and let's remember once again that all these things which are written were written for our admonition and our learning, those things written aforetime, the historical examples of the patriarchs and of the nation of Israel and of the prophets were written for our admonition and our learning upon whom the ends of the world are come. Therein the Bible and form an integral part of life's book because they are applicable now. The experiences of the prophets are just as applicable today as they were in the lives of those prophets who experienced their own trials. They're written for you and me. And so what are some of the experiences of not only Israel, but of the prophets and of other servants of God that are mentioned in the pages of what we commonly call the Old Testament? We need to understand. So back here in Genesis, the 14th chapter, and let's begin in verse 18 and reading through verse 20. He said, "And Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought forth bread and wine, and he was the priest of the Most High God. And he blessed him," Abraham that is, "and said, Blessed be Abraham of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth," that is God, who is possessor of heaven and earth, "and blessed be the Most High God, which hath delivered thine enemies into thy hand, and he gave him tithes of all." He said, "Blessed be the Most High God, who has delivered thine enemies into thy hands. Now, not without or prior to a series of trials and experiences. Because Abraham was tried, or as the Bible says, tempted. He was tried in many, many ways as a type of Jesus Christ. He went through very severe and very bizarre trials and experiences. Yet the Bible says in the final analysis that the Most High God delivered all of his enemies into his hands. So the promise of God is that if we manifest the kind of continuity which is expressed in faith, that we should, and we're firm in our resolve to the end, for it is he that endures unto the end that shall be saved, God is going to deliver all those enemies into your very hands. Now, what are you going to do with them? Are you going to treat them as enemies? Or at the time God may deliver them into your hands, are you going to show them real affection, mercy, tolerance, and kindness? You see, many of your enemies are going to be delivered into your hands at the time you're born into the family of God and you're given an awesome responsibility over them. How are you going to treat them? You're going to say, yeah, I remember you, you old so-and-so. Now let me assure you, I've got the power and I'm going to get the advantage of you. A pound of flesh for a pound of flesh. Boy, you just step out of the way and let me tell you, you're in for it. No, if that attitude prevails, we're not even going to be there. But we're going to look at it and find a great exaltation in the ability to convey kindness where only ruthlessness was tendered to us. It'll cover a multitude of sins or problems. So here was a classic example of Abraham. And blessed be the Most High God who has delivered thine enemies into thy hand. And whatever the enemy may be, if we have that faith and confidence in God, it's going to be delivered into your hands. That means that you're not going to hold it in the palm of your hands like this. It means that you're going to have the control over it. And what is your greatest enemy? Well, probably the greatest enemy is your mind. And then next to that is the carnality of the flesh. And then after that is Satan. Then after that would be the fabric of the society that both have created. And then after that would be your peers, other human beings. Now, God says they're going to be delivered into your hands. So that means that if you pray, and if you have that confidence and trust in God, your minds and your hearts are going to be delivered into control, the kind of control that you want. And I want to assure you, brethren, that that is a meaningful thought to me. There is nothing, and I mean literally nothing in life, that is so devastating and distressing to me as the wretchedness of a carnal mind. And I was born with one too. I don't intend to kid anybody. But it only distresses me when people come to me and think that they're pulling the wool over my eyes because I don't say anything. They come to me and they tell about what they've done and how they, you know, they leave the impression that they're as fine as all the Pharisees in the days of Jesus Christ. I'm not going to come right back and say, well, now who are you kidding? No, there's no need for that. I'd rather do mine in an objective manner when I sit before you in a sermon. And if people aren't going to get it out of a sermon, they certainly aren't going to take it because I can get up with both my clodhoppers, you know, and just put my feet right on their necks and say, you will absorb it. They're not going to take it. When are we going to learn that this is not the time of repression and the time we're going to compel the people to absorb God's way and to be obedient? There's no way. If they don't do it from heart and mind, they're not going to subscribe to it anyway. This is a time, brethren, when it must be of volition, which means it must be of your own personal will. It is my responsibility to thunder it out. And I've done my level best to do that. And God forgive me for all the wretched mistakes or the failures. But it is your responsibility to hear and to act upon it. And it is not my responsibility to go out and say, you will do it or you're not going to stay around me. You know, after all, I don't want to be tainted by whoever you are. Reminds me of the case, you know, and I think we're going to get to that. No, it's in one of the Christian Living tapes that I just made. Of the Pharisees, you know, that when this woman that out of whom had been cast seven demons, and she had been an absolute harlot. And they looked at her and said, if, you know, here she came and wiped his feet with her hair and poured tears out, you know, and washed his feet with her tears, and she had performed many, many marvelous feats at the time that Jesus Christ was there. And here were these Pharisees sitting over there, and one has to ask, well, how did they know about her failures? Seems to me they must have been involved. And but anyway, they said, why, this man can't be a prophet. If he were really a prophet, he'd know who this woman is. He wouldn't have anything to do with her. So now they censored Jesus Christ, because here he was very kind, and he even told her that her sins were forgiven and that she was very acceptable in his sight. Because she, not because she continued in that way, she had recognized what she was, she admitted what she was, and she had come to recognize Christ for what he was and accepted Christ for what he was. But here were these arrogant Pharisees sitting there who were probably 10 times as guilty as she, but they left the impression that they didn't need to repent. They hadn't done anything. Or as the Bible calls it, self-righteousness. I'll tell you, brethren, that is not acceptable in the sight of God. We walk around with our puffed out chests and so on, where we're lifted up in our arrogance and vanity, and we're going to be brought down one of these days. Why do you think there is prophecy after prophecy in the Word of God? And I know I'm always speaking to the wrong people. And I just wish I could get it to the right ones. But maybe it will also serve as a very definite warning for all of us. But why does Isaiah over and over and over say in that day that the haughtiness of mankind is going to be brought down? I'll tell you, the only thing that's acceptable in the sight of God is the denigration of self. When we come to recognize what we are and how we loathe ourselves in the sight of God, then we are proper clay with which God can begin to mold the true character that he wants. Now, that's the only way we're going to be the children of Abraham. It's the only way. So he said, blessed be the Most High God, who will then deliver your enemies into your hands. And he gave him tithes of all. The term thine enemies is the same expression. And this word, if I'm not mistaken, is this tsar. Yeah, T-Z-A-H-R. Tsar. Now, next, I want you to notice Numbers, the 10th chapter. Numbers, the 10th chapter, and let's read verse 9. I'd like to cover several of these points today, although, as I have said at various times when discussing this, I do not want to just move across it dramatically, because there's too much material that is left out if we do not analyze it and think about it. So here in Numbers, the 10th chapter, and verse 9, we read, and if you go to war in your land against the enemy, if you go to war in your land against the enemy here is this tsar, that oppresses you, then you shall blow an alarm with the trumpets, and you shall be remembered. You shall blow the alarm. And then God says, you shall be remembered before the Lord your God, and you shall be saved from your enemies. Now, ancient Israel was not only a physical nation, it was the church of God. The people of God, the peculiar people, the called out ones. Today, the church of God are the called out, and they are also the Israel of God, as I've said to you many times from Galatians 6 and 16, I believe. The church of God is the Israel of God today. Now, we understand that that church also was to apostatize. The Bible tells us very clearly. But there was a remnant who would remain faithful. It didn't say remnants. It didn't say people scattered all over the world. There are those who are going to remain faithful to God and honor God in the right spirit and the right attitude. Now, he said, therefore, if this historical example, as we find in 1 Corinthians, the 10th chapter, for all those things which happened to ancient Israel are written for your admonition and my admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. That's why he said what he did in 1 Corinthians, the 10th chapter, verses 6 and 11. So what's written with respect to ancient Israel has a distinct spiritual application to you and me today. What is the war we're fighting? It is the war of our own natures. As the called and the chosen of God, our enemies are not the peoples of some physical nation, but our own natures and the natures of human beings, as well as Satan and his cohorts. And we're engaged in an awesome war. It's a struggle. The weapons of our warfare, isn't that what he said? Over in 2 Corinthians, retain your place there, and let's turn to 2 Corinthians, the 10th chapter, very quickly here. 2 Corinthians 10, and let's note verse 5. For the weapons of our warfare, so we are engaged in a great, a dramatic, a mighty war. But mighty are not carnal. That is, they are not physical. We are not fighting physical enemies anymore. This time we're fighting mental, philosophical, or problems of the heart and mind. But mighty through God to the pulling down of strongholds. That is, the giant circumvallations, the Maginot Line, or the other various forms of the circumvallation or military protection that have been set up. And we're fighting a major warfare. It is a war of the minds. Is it going to be the mind of Jesus Christ that will rule in our lives, or will our natural carnal minds rule? And so we're pulling down these mighty strongholds, casting down imaginations. Here are the natural circumvallations, or the natural Maginot Line, the reasonings of human minds. That's what we're going to have to bring down. And let me tell you, he didn't call them for naught, the great circumvallations of our warfare. Not at all, because they are mighty, mighty pillboxes or, cement abutments or whatever that are used for the defense of major lines or military operations. And our minds are major, major armaments or areas of as fortresses against the mind of truth. That's the warfare we're fighting, and it is a major warfare. Now, I understand, brethren, that the rationale is going to go on to the day of Jesus Christ. But what I'm saying, brethren, is that we're not going to argue with Jesus Christ in the day of his return. It is high time that we all, and regardless of whom we may be or who may even hear the voice as it goes out on this tape, wherever, at whatever time, we are going to face that actual judgment at one of these days, or during the at the time of Jesus Christ. And at that time, there is going to be weeping and gnashing of teeth. And no matter how many times we have justified the self, that is going to be pointed out emphatically and absolutely, and I don't care whether we agree with ourselves or not. It's going to be a troubling thing in that day. The only thing that is ever going to see us through. And I know that I have said over and over and over this very principle, but it is a principle that every writer of the New Testament began to use from the time of the departure. And that began very early in the game, when they said, you must remain faithful to that which you were taught. In every letter of the Apostle Paul, that was the central theme. Why? Because they had already received the truth, and a very few short years, yes, beginning approximately 7 years after the call and the commission of the Apostle Paul, the apostasy had already begun. And he was compelled then by the Spirit of God to powerfully and long proclaim the necessity to remain faithful to the truth which they had been given. Brethren, we have been given that. And the only way we're going to remain faithful to God is if we keep those minds under control. If we start arguing, if we start using our own minds and building up our own imaginations, our own defenses, if we are going to justify ourselves, we're going to find ourselves in unique and terrifying troubles. And the war is going to be all the more problematic and difficult. Somebody is fighting that battle in the last days. So going back to Numbers now, Numbers the 10th chapter, and notice verse 9. And if you go to war in your land, here was the war of the political entity of Israel as well as the body of the church, because it was physical at that time. So we are not fighting military operations on a physical level today. We're not allowed to. Because we are not a nation at the present time, we're going to be formed into one. But there is a day coming when the commander-in-chief is going to fight. When he's going to go to war, that's what Revelation 19 is all about. And the sword of the truth is his weapon. And he's going to slay them with it. I want to tell you, that's going to be a powerful sword. A powerful sword. Well, the sword that we use today is the sword of that truth which has been given to us. God's truth. And we don't have to be caught up in sedition and hate and emulations and wrath and all the other characteristics of the flesh. We can do it in a very simple, unobtrusive manner. And it's most effective. God's truth. Where we're not buffeted by all these people who do this and this and that and something else. We're people of continuity. We're people who are consistent. We have our feet down. We're not troubled. We don't believe everything that we hear from every external and far-reaching corner. We just don't. We're not moved dramatically. You know, I'll tell you, I did not move dramatically from Worldwide Church of God. I took an awful long time because I was petrified. You know, I wanted in God's kingdom, and I still do. And when you make a move, when you believe that it is the body of Jesus Christ and it is proclaiming God's truth for 28 years, you don't finally just say, you know, with a flick of the wrist, oh, well, doesn't mean anything to me. I have to firmly believe there were a lot of people that must never have been there for any other reason than some personal advantage. You know, they threw it overboard with not even a second thought, I guess. Now they're out there venomously fighting it. But I couldn't do it. It was a very traumatic experience. And I still believe that it is the body. And I will always believe it. But I also know that the true servants of God in the last days are estranged. How can you be estranged from the body and yet be the body? You can't be both. The body has always been one, will be one, but the body is apostate today, unfortunately. I understood that and recognized it, and I made it very clear, even to our lawyer down in Eugene, that we were only doing this on a legal premise, that we consider ourselves estranged brethren from that body. And that's where we are, and we will remain that as long as I'm here, God giving me the character and the ability to retain that control. Well, when I understood the complications and the curses of God for establishing one's own work, arrogating and assuming anything that God never gave to you, it would have frightened me to tears. But there are plenty of people, I guess, don't care what God says. They're going to do their own thing. But I read it. I went from Genesis to Revelation, time and time again, to find out if God ever authorized any human being to step out or what the conditions were. I found out what they were, all right enough. You just better not do it. And when God sends somebody, there aren't any doubts. You know, why do I have to go out and say, well, God's chosen me? You know, all I did was I conjured that up in my own mind, which a lot of people are doing. Now, I didn't conjure up my call because I do not know of one single human being that dragged his feet and dug in his heels any more than I did. And I fought it. I didn't see any reason to do it. Until I was finally compelled and convinced, and I knew there wasn't any way out of it. And I accepted it as God's truth and firmly believed it. Now, I know you did too, brethren. I don't know the beginnings of all of you, spiritually speaking, but I do know the beginnings of many people across this country because I talked to them. And I saw some of the most unique, miraculous things. If I were to take the next 4 hours telling you about some of the circumstances I could not possibly complete of the special, unique circumstances of God's call in the lives of many, many people. I know some of you went through some very unique ones also. And then to turn around now and hurl the barbs back that these people are, somebody's got to be a hypocrite. One time or the other or somewhere, whether we want to admit it or whether we don't. Brethren, there's a war going on. We don't need to worry about World War III. We're fighting a war that is far more intense. And it's greater in its scope right now than World Wars I, II, and III combined. And the war, brethren, is in your minds and your hearts right now. And your enemies are Satan, your own minds and your own hearts, your own thoughts, your own ways, as well as the world. It's a giant war. So the weapons of our warfare are not carnal to the pulling down of strongholds. I mean, we need the big guns of the Spirit of God. We need the big guns of Jesus Christ in our lives, of faith and of confidence. Or we're not going to win that war. And there are people who are capitulating, surrendering, the white flag of surrender almost daily. We'd better be careful, brethren. What scares me is the fact that I have seen so many do it, and I considered that many of them really had their feet down. Where does that put us? The beginning of your slide is when you are sufficiently powerful in your own minds and your hearts that you think it can't happen to you. I'll tell you, brethren, the only thing that's going to keep us in there is if we are that close to God the Father and to Jesus Christ in prayer, in fasting, and in Bible study. Well, we'd better be. Because the war is going to rage ever more intensely, day by day, from here on out. And the issues that you're going to be fighting are clear and precise. Doubt, suspicion. The thrust of self-justification. And they're going to exist. Next, brethren, let's notice Numbers 24. Numbers, the 24th chapter. And noting verses 1 through 9. 24, beginning in verse 1. Here now is the example of a servant of God. And I can't, you know, I'm not going to be dogmatic about that, but I just simply cannot understand the purpose of Balaam if it does not reflect one called of God who desired that he would like to have the wages of unrighteousness rather than the wages of righteousness, as the Bible says. Who desired to have the wages of unrighteousness. He had a chance by this huge offer that was given by these Arabic peoples, the half-brothers of, maybe I should say by this time it wouldn't have been half-brothers, but it would have been cousins twice or three times removed. Even the Bible does infer, though, that they are still brothers. The brother that put, the axe to the neck of his brother. God is not going to take kindly to that whatsoever. But anyway, I cannot conceive of Balak having been a Gentile. It just has no relevancy. It has no significance. If you have Balaam as an outsider, that was sitting over here in the confines of Moab, and he decided, that he saw Israel coming, and he understood who they were, so he was going to get rid of them. He was going to curse them. Well, we have had people in China for many, many years before this, because the oldest civilization on the face of the earth, outside of that cradle of civilization and the beginning of the people in Shinar, Mesopotamia, in that general area, is China. And their religions go all the way back to the beginning of the establishment of China and of the Orient. Yet, you don't find anything in the Bible about that, or if we do, it's certainly couched and we certainly don't understand it. So here were all these giant peoples over in that area. They're significant peoples of the world too. Yet you don't find anything in the Bible about them. Why then should there have been any specific thing with respect to the Arabic peoples except they interfaced with Israel and they became squatters in that province or that domain of land that God had foreordained for Israel before there was ever an Israel born. From the foundation of the world, the lines and the geographic delineations of nations had already been established. For what reason? Deuteronomy 32 and verse 8 tells you that very clearly, coupled with also Acts 26 and verse 17 and 18 or whatever it is over there. Of one blood made he all nations, over in Acts. And then he said in Deuteronomy 32 that he set up the bounds of these nations and established them back at the time of Adam, even in relationship to the nation of Israel. Therefore, Israel was foreordained by God before Israel was ever born. Then anyone who took up possession in Palestine or the Fertile Crescent area, even though geographically years ahead of Israel coming out of the land of Egypt, still were squatters. Why? Because God is owner of heaven and earth. And if he owns it, he can give it to whom he pleases, can't he? And God never gave that property to the Arabic peoples. He gave it to Israel. Now, we've had all kinds of problems generated since. And I won't even begin to go into those, because that's going to become the very central problem of the entire conflict of this world. And I understand in a way I have never understood it before, because of the things that are going on politically and have been going on politically, in something that is transpiring there that is the greatest rape of all times. Now we can understand why it's going to be the catalyst of a third world war that's going to be devastating. Never made sense. A lot of these things never made sense. We just simply accepted them and went on. I still do not know the specifics. I only know the generalities. But it certainly tells us why it's going to be a major and a unique problem. All right, here is Balaam now. And the only answer to this, when you put all the text together, is that Balaam was a true minister gone sour. A renegade, a rebel, who wanted the wages of this world, who turned back to it and was going to exploit his capabilities, the inside knowledge which he possessed, and he hoped to gain great money out of it. That's what he wanted to do, and he wanted God's approbation. So what this shows, brethren, here was a true minister of God gone astray, but who still wanted the blessings of God, going out and doing what he wanted to do. And isn't that what human beings do when they depart from the truth? They go out, they forget all about the truth, and they go their own direction, their own pursuits, but they still want God's approbation and approval. And then they'll sit there and deride everybody that hangs on to it. Why? They're your most ferocious enemies. You know why? Because their minds once knew and understood the truth. That's why the hate surfaces. But I want to tell you something else, brethren. Watch it and be aware of it. I state this only objectively without any finger pointing whatsoever. But also the people who were once with you, who exited with you, who knew and understood, but who refused to fight the battles of their own minds, are going to become your most bizarre enemies. You watch it and see. I don't claim to be any prophet, for I'm not. I'm only saying that I read the historical fabric of what has happened. Why do you think Laban became the key enemy of his own son-in-law? What are all the classic examples of the Bible? It always happens from within. Because they know there is a sixth sense that goes with it, and they're doing their level best to fight it. Why? Because they're being agitated by a force that knows. Satan believes. You realize that? He trembles at it. Believing in its own right is woefully inadequate, because you must act on it. That's the difference. Satan believes it. He knows. But he won't act on it. He won't live up to it. So now, because he knows and he understands, and he knows who you are, and he knows what he has done, Therefore, anyone he can convince becomes a key enemy. Exactly the same way he was. He was on the inner circle. He sat right with God as one of the exalted angels. He was privy to the highest and most significant knowledge. It makes him the most lethal enemy. And so it happens across the board. So, brethren, here in now the 24th chapter of Numbers, and when Balaam saw that it pleased the Lord to bless Israel, he went not, as at other times, to seek for enchantments. And remember on one of the tapes, what's this word, enchantments? In other words, he didn't continue his practice of witchcraft. Same word. Balaam, a true servant of God at one time, who forgot about fighting himself and who thought there was an advantage to become a part of the occult. He was a witch, in other words. So at this time, he didn't go. But I want you to notice that God is dealing with him. Because, not because God approved of what he was doing, but because of his relationship with God's chosen people. See, God isn't limited at all. And you know, the people make the most colossal, gigantic mistakes not putting two and two together. Who is it that still goes before the throne of God? The chief of witches. Satan the devil. You know why? Because he hasn't been removed from his post yet. He goes up there and he's constantly accusing you because God has not yet removed him from that exalted position as one of the angels at the very throne of God. There are times, brethren, when I almost give up in despair when I hear some of these things float back through. It's almost as though we couldn't care what's in the Bible, and we don't even try to put it together. So when Satan goes up before God and he communicates with him, as he did in the case of Job and a lot of other cases, poor God, I guess what we better do is boot him off of his throne. Hey, listen, bud, you put up with that kind of trash, you know, you're not going to get my service. Well, now, just who in the world do we think we are? And I find that the Bible tells me very clearly that even Michael, who is ever so much higher than we are at this point, dared not bring a railing accusation against him, but said, "The Eternal rebuke you." Maybe we'd better stop and think for just a moment. Does that mean approbation or approval? No, it means that we are qualifying, hopefully, to take over some positions. And we are never going to be given those positions if we don't learn respect, even though they are wrong. The Bible tells me that if we do good and we respond to those who are kind to us and who think like we do, we're no different than the Gentiles. Don't they do the same thing? The only time, my dear brethren, we prove our value at all is when we respond affectionately, kindly, rightly, even if the office is abused. Now, that's why we must be careful about what we say with respect to the leadership in Worldwide Church of God. And I have said that all along. We'd better be very careful, because we're qualifying for some pretty awesome responsibilities if we learn. But the only way you're going to prove it is if you do the right thing, even in times of adversity. So when Balaam saw that it pleased the Lord to bless Israel, he went not out as other times to seek for enchantments, but he set his face toward the wilderness. Set his face. Hardness. Determination. And Balaam lifted up his eyes and he saw Israel abiding in his tents according to their tribes, and the Spirit of God came upon him. Why, poor God, I guess he didn't even recognize. And the Spirit made a colossal mistake here, as a long arm of God's influence, didn't even recognize that Balaam was a witch. Yeah, the Bible, I've forgotten it's in Jude, or in Judges rather. Balaam is called a witch, pointedly. So he took up his parable and said, Balaam the son of Beor hath said, and the man whose eyes are open hath said, he hath said, which heard the words of God, which saw the vision of the Almighty, falling into a trance, but having his eyes open. How goodly are thy tents, O Jacob, and thy tabernacles, O Israel! As the valleys are they spread forth, as gardens by the riverside, as the trees of line aloes, which the Lord hath planted, and as cedar trees beside the waters. He shall pour the water out of his buckets, and his seed shall be in many waters, and his king shall be higher than Agag, and his kingdom shall be exalted. God brought him forth out of Egypt. He hath, as it were, the strength of a unicorn. Isn't it funny? Unicorn. Any of you ever seen a unicorn? You know what they are? Well, it's a part of the occult. What's it doing in the Bible, then, as an illustration? The strength of a unicorn. He shall eat up the nations, his enemies. Here's what God says was going to happen. He shall eat up the nations, his enemies. In other words, as ancient Israel was a nation and a church of God, or the church, her enemies were national. So today, as we are the church of God, and individuals, so our enemies today are the churches and individuals. And shall break their bones and pierce them through with his arrows. He couched, he lay down as a lion, and as a great lion, who shall stir him up? Blessed is he that blesses you, and cursed is he that curses you. So the point is, God's blessing or blessings are upon his chosen. And we better remember who they are. Because if we curse them, and how do you curse anybody? That means if you speak adversely about them, then God's curses are upon us. God's curses are upon us. We'd better be very careful and we'd better know. Now, the point is, I don't think that we should become involved in any of that type of thing. Why do we need to ridicule anyone? What I want to deal with are objectively the facts. Now, if they apply, if the shoe fits, as they say, then wear it. But I still want to deal with the facts. And I will deal with the facts and let the chips fall where they were. Now, if somebody, because the facts have been laid out and the conditions have made plain, if they apply it and they think that it applies to them and they become upset or distressed about that, that's their problem. It's not mine. After all, what's the greatest stumbling block in the world? This book. It is the rock of stumbling, the Bible tells us. So more people stumble over this than stumble over anything. Now, if we're going to stumble over the truth of God, if we're going to stumble over facts, then it's our problem. But what we must not do is name names and become involved in direct altercations with individuals. God does not permit that. Brethren, I would myself like sometime. And you know, I have a tendency to believe somebody. If they ever left and remained quiet, they didn't say anything, they made no attempt to sow discord, to break up, to malign, to ridicule anyone, I'd say, there must be something wrong with us. But you know, they all go out justifying themselves. They hurl brickbats, that's all I need. The minute they do that, that tells me that the spirit is wrong. It tells me they are wrong. I want to write a letter to that effect so that we can evaluate the situations, and I'm working on it right now. So we can evaluate. We don't need to be distressed by those things. All right? Balaam wrote some very significant lessons for us. Obviously, a very successful servant of God at one time. He must have had tremendous power and ability. But he also had an awful lot of greed, lust. And he wanted the things this world offered, because it said that he sold himself out for the wages of unrighteousness. Now, will we? If we do that, I want to assure you, brethren, just exactly as God said, that I'm going to bless my own with respect to Israel, and I'm going to curse those who curse them, so are we going to fall under either the blessings or the cursings, whichever the case may be. Next, I want you to notice Deuteronomy 33. Deuteronomy, the 33rd chapter, and verse 7. And this is the blessing of Judah. And he said, "Hear, Lord, the voice of Judah, and bring him in unto his people. Let his hands be sufficient for him, and be thou an help to him from his enemies." Did you know that here is a prognostication many, many, many years ago that the Jewish people were going to be the key enemies of a lot of people? That is, there would be, Judah would have many enemies, let's put it that way. Who is it that stirred up all this garbage that goes on today? Why, you have the strangest things in the world that come out, even to get Jesus Christ out of being a Jew. They'll go so far as to have Satan procreating with Eve. Which, if you can only read the Bible in just pure, plain language, you know is not possible. And did you know that there were entire groups that literally believed that? And did you also know that it is a cardinal tenet of the Masonic Lodge? You see, a lot of people who are Masons don't even know what they believe, because they don't really tell you until you get up to a certain level, and not very few people get up to that level. The rest of them are merely the chattel of life that support this elite. That's why they're there. And they keep them in gross ignorance. They tell them all kinds of lies to keep them there. They don't tell them the truth at all. But there are also religious organizations that have exactly the same philosophies, and many of them. I have said many, many times, the only people that are really going to grasp what's going on in the world are the truly called of God. Do you know why? There are many people who see what's going on economically, politically, educationally, militarily, but they do not see the religious aspect of it. Why they think if they got back to the fundamental religion of the Baptists and the Methodists and the Presbyterians and the Anglicans and the Catholics and so on, that we'd have a great society once again. They don't even realize that they are, to one degree or another, within the same framework. Okay, brethren, what is he saying here then? Here is a prophecy that deals with the last days, a prophecy that tells us that Judah is going to have many enemies. Enemies that are going to do anything they can to discredit Christ, the true Christ. Because the true Christ is the Lion of the tribe of Judah. For Christ came unto his own, and his own received him not. But the Christ that is commonly accepted today is not that Christ who came through Judah. Are you aware of that? The Christ that they are prognosticating, the Christ that they proclaim, is not the Lion of the tribe of Judah, but is a fabrication that proceeded from the minds and the lips of Satan himself. And so we have book after book after book that's written to that effect. Now, brethren, I do not doubt the fact that out of that tribe came many, 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 many injurious people who not only had a contempt for their own nationality and were willing to use it to their own end for nefarious purposes, but also had nothing but contempt for the rest of the world. I do not deny that. But what I am saying is, and God help me, never will I permit or allow myself to ever accept the concept the Jews, period, are an inferior people, and they are not the progenitors of Christ, but they are this evil seed that came through the cohabiting of Satan and of Eve. All kinds of books, ridiculous. And yet, on the other hand, the Bible said that there are Jews who claim that they are Jews and are not. I hope one of these days to be able to answer all the riddles that are involved. But it's going to take a long time. It's going to take a lot of hard struggling, a lot of reading. But I'm intending to do a lot of work on that over in Switzerland. I want to follow the lineage of Judah all the way through. I want to follow the lineage of these nations all the way through. And without putting any specifics, I don't have to say, well, Moab is so-and-so. Let's just say whoever Moab is. Here's what's going to happen. And just leave it right there. But I'm intending to do a lot of work on that when I'm in Switzerland this year. But the Bible tells us that they were going to have many enemies, and indeed they do. Do you know why? Few people understand it, because they want to discredit the true Christ. They're discrediting the true Christ. Why do you think they're going to fight him at his second coming? It's worthy of a lot of thinking. Well, brethren, more concerning our trials and our tribulations and the difficulties we're going to experience and the fate of those who plague and distress us. I have a lot more that I want to say on that. We'll pick it up next time.
Persecution, trial, and tribulation. The Church of God the Eternal has just presented the number 18 tape in this series of vital interest and intense concern to every Christian. Your speaker has been Mr. Raymond Cole.